Well, folks, welcome to program number 29 of SANS. Well, your recording date is Friday, December 12th, and I wanted to do this much earlier in the day. But, you know, it's better made available when you have the energy to do it instead of when you don't. Don't you think? This is podcast 29 of SANS News Bites, where we take their newsletter. We leave exactly what they are talking about in place, and we talk about what we think. If we're not versed in the matter, and the commentary will speak enough to what we could think of it, we'll put it in. And sometimes we'll put it in when we think that, yeah, this is kind of what I'm thinking, this fits for me. The editors are always at the end of the newsletter, and links to each newsletter are in our show notes, which are only available right now on the RSS feed. We really need to catch up on the blog. One of the items which came about, and it's probably going to be in the upcoming newsletter for Friday, December 12th, is more than likely going to be the UK being proactive. They have gone after LastPass now for their 2022 breach. I spotted an article on Bleeping Computer, but again, I was trying to do several other things, and I haven't really blogged a whole lot either. I started, but then got busy, and of course, this time of year for me is one that I'm not really going to go into, but my energy level is not where it probably should be, so I'm doing the best I can here, and if you find something that is of interest in the newsletter, let me know, or even if you think something might be in the newsletter, send it over. It's a possibility we could bug it and call it good, and we'll see how it goes. Contact Jared's Technology Podcast Network by sending an email at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or call the comment line at 888-405-7524. This is SANS News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information security, training, certification, and research, December 5th, 2025. And this is volume 27, number 88. And this file, if you want a Braille copy, is already in English Braille American Edition, but we can make a unified English Braille copy, and we can also go ahead and make sure that you get that copy. Thank you so much for subscribing, and here is the table of contents for Friday's newsletter. Not this Friday the 12th, but last Friday the 5th. And since we are going to be on break, we'll be doing one more TSB, and then most of the rest of the programming should be SANS, so we'll be looking to catch up and keep ourselves up to date as best we can. So, the table of contents for the top of the news for this program include Update Now, React, and Next.js contains CVSS 10.0 RCE flaw. December Android Security Bulletin includes fixes for 2 0-days. And Microsoft and Zero Patch address exploited Windows shortcut flaw. And wait until you actually hear this. If my memory serves me correctly, this is a multi-year problem. And if I'm right, because I did the Braille some time ago, this is more than likely going to be our moron of the podcast. At least one of them for the moment. Here is the rest of the news from the table of contents. Marquee discloses ransomware and data breach. Askel is gradually recovering from October ransomware attack. India rolls back mandate for pre-installed cybersecurity app. I'll just tell you right here, right now, that that doesn't surprise me, because critics were asking questions, and I even said, how is this even going to be implemented and enforced? FTC reaches settlement with Illuminati Education over issues stemming from December 2021 breach. Possibly another moron? Guess we'll see. CISA, ASD, and international partners publish principles for securely integrating AI in operational technology, also known in this industry as OT. CISA Industrial Control System Advisories. So those are the top of the news items, and the rest of the news items, otherwise known as your table of contents. Let's go ahead and start with top of the news on page 1. And again, if you'd like a Braille copy, let me know. Because these items probably have the most coverage, and that's why they're first in line. Update Now, React, and Next.js contains CVSS 10.0 RCE flaw. On November 29, 2025, researcher Lachlan Davidson disclosed a critical vulnerability affecting React server components, RSC, before versions 19.0.1, 19.1.2, and 19.2.1. CVE 2025 55182. CVSS score 10.0 allows an unauthenticated remote attacker to achieve code execution when React deserializes a malicious HTTP request at a server endpoint. Again, this is HTTP. This is not HTTPS. And I know that it's been talked about through the years that we move to HTTPS, but maybe some things cannot do that, and I completely understand that. But this is bad, because the high end of the scale on the Common Vulnerability Scoring System, which is what CVSS stands for, is 10, and it goes from 0 to 10 in point increments. Wiz researchers estimate that 39% of cloud environments contain vulnerable React instances, noting that the vulnerable configuration is the default configuration. Well, at least it's not half the installations, but it should be a lot less. But we know that will never happen, so this is not a surprise. Wiz emphasizes to security teams, that the only defensive mitigation is to upgrade React and dependencies, including RSC-enabled frameworks. Notably, the Next.js development framework is downstream of the protocol involved, and so inherits the flaw. However, a separate enumeration for impact on Next.js CVE 2025-66478 has been rejected as a duplicate of the React flaw. Users must update Next.js to releases 15.0.5, 15.1.9, 15.2.6, 15.3.6, 15.4.8, 15.5.7, and 16.0.7. So lots of 15s and lots of 16 versions. That's 5 versions they're keeping tabs on here. So this means they're running 15.04, 15.18, 15.2.5, that's 15.2.5, 15.3.5, so 15.3.5, 15.4.7, 15.5.6, and 16.0.6. Those are all earlier versions of the software. If it wasn't these exact numbers, they're similarly numbered, because sometimes you can go like 0.5 to 0.7 in, let's say, the 16.0 series, because 0.6 was a test build. So take that with a grain of salt. Could be a version or two below, but that's 5 different versions of this. I think the issue is that we only need 1, not 5. okay, I could see two. So say 15.5.7/654, whatever. And the 16 series, 16.0.45, and then upgrade that to 7. Okay? Not 5. The vulnerability has been added to CIS's known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, and that could be a good thing, although we don't know if there are any exploits in the wild. And maybe that's a good thing. Put it in the CAV catalog now before we find out that it's being exploited to force upgrade. Frost and Neely cover this. Read their comments. It's sound advice to me. Have a CVS score of 10.0 is never good. And I will leave it up to them to cover this in more detail because, as I said in my write-up of this, their advice is sound. They've probably read these articles. I haven't. I will probably not read many of these articles because, you know, they can scope out and find these things. I, of course, could, but I only look at several sources. I can't find every little item, and blogging everything is tricky enough. Finding it is another problem. Okay. One of the trivia questions that I really thought about asking, but I probably won't, will be, which was the most exploited operating system this year in regards to malicious things? Not bugs, but malicious things like applications. But I'm not going to do that because we lost track a long time ago. Like, even after the first of the month. And the reason why I wanted to do this is because I had a file of iOS and Android to keep tabs. And in one instance alone, there were over 20,000 apps. And then after that time, we lost track. So it was 23,161 to 10 from Android versus iOS. And while that number's well gone up, you can already know the answer's Android. And this next item, which is why I wanted to bring this up, covers it. While these are vulnerabilities and not app removals, they've had issues with 0 days this year, too. And I'm talking Google as a company, not necessarily Android specifically here. December Android Security Bulletin includes fixes for 2 0-days. Google's Android Security Bulletin for December 2025 includes fixes for more than 100 vulnerabilities, including a pair of actively exploited flaws in Android framework, both vulnerabilities, a privilege escalation issue, CVE 2025-48572, and an information disclosure flaw, CVE 2025-48663, have been added to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's CISA's known exploited catalog, the vulnerabilities catalog. Despite neither having a NIST NVD entry yet, both have mitigation deadlines of December 23rd for U.S. federal civilian executive branch agencies. And I think that's good. The fact that they don't have a NIST score and the fact that they are not in the wild yet, get it in the catalog, force people to update, because you don't want it sitting out there. The Android Bulletin rates both vulnerabilities as high severity. In all, the bulletin addresses 7 vulnerabilities with a critical rating, 1 in Android framework, 4 in Android kernel, and 2 in Qualcomm components. And Qualcomm is a manufacturer. This sounds bad enough that all 3 editors who wrote in this newsletter for this pair of flaws are telling you to update your device when updates become available. For cellular carriers, when they push the update to you, go and get it. I can't help you more than this. Full comments in the newsletter. And again, all 3 editors are saying update. This is bad. And they do know cellular carriers take their sweet time, because they want to package it up and put their own things in there. But once it pings you for that update, go say yes and get yourself updated. All right, folks, let's move along now to the next item, which is Microsoft and them and Zero Patch address exploited Windows shortcut flaw. Okay, so Microsoft and Zero Patch address exploited Windows shortcut flaw. Following 7 years of widespread exploitation and a March 2025 report from Trend Zero Day Initiative, Trend Micro's Zero Day Initiative, ZDI, Microsoft has patched a high severity flaw in Windows shortcut files .lnk without releasing an advisory. Tracked previously as ZDI CAN 25373, and now as CVE 2025-9491, the flaw allows an attacker to achieve remote code execution by hiding malicious command line arguments in a shortcut's target using white space characters to completely prevent the code from displaying within the 260 character limit of the properties field. ZDI observed nearly 1,000 samples of these malicious files in campaigns from as early as 2017, including abuse by state-sponsored hacking groups targeting governments, private entities, financial organizations, think tanks, telecommunication service providers, and military defense agencies, primarily in the United States, as well as in Canada, Russia, South Korea, Vietnam, and Brazil. ZDI's analysis suggests nearly 70% of the campaign's focus on information theft and espionage. While Microsoft previously had not considered the UI manipulation to be a security issue requiring a patch, Acros Security's Zero Patch Project reports that Windows releases since June 2025 have been gradually implementing a change that removes the character limit for the properties field. Citing a report by Arctic Wolf on malicious.lnk exploitation in cyber espionage by Chinese affiliated threat actors targeting European diplomatic entities in Hungary, Belgium, and additional European nations during September and October 2025, Zero Patch has released an alternative defensive micropatch that identifies and shortens suspiciously long targets in any programmatic created .lnk files opened by Windows Explorer. Three folks commented well here, and they did comment well here. If you can, patch this one. If you don't deal with shortcuts much, you'll be all right. But my advice, don't just open any shortcut file you receive out of the blue. It doesn't say how this happens, and I've not read any articles on this. This can't be good. 7 years is a long time for a bug not to be fixed. If this isn't bad enough, I don't know what is. We've put this also in Throwback Saturday Nights folder for them to run. This can't be good. It just can't. And Microsoft should be ashamed of itself. If you're following along, thanks so much for listening. I'm Jared Reimer, part of Jared's Technology Blog Network. And we are now on page 6 of the file, and we are now on the rest of the news. And I'm sure that people are going to be just as interested in the rest of the news as the rest of what we have to cover, because it all has its place, and we just go in order here. Marquee discloses ransomware and data breach. Marquee, a company whose software handles customer data for over 700 financial institutions, has disclosed a ransomware attack and data breach that took place on August 14th, 2025. The company engaged cybersecurity experts through legal counsel, notified law enforcement, and began an investigation upon determining that suspicious activity on its network was the result of a ransomware attack. The investigation, which ended in October 2025, revealed that an unauthorized third party accessed Marquee's network through its Sonic Wall firewall and may have acquired certain files from its systems. And we've talked, by the way, about Sonic Wall and their various issues on TSB as part of that series. So this probably is not going to be much of a surprise when you hear this from this newsletter. Security Week estimates across Marquee's breach notifications that as many as 750,000 individuals may be affected, Marquee states in its notification to Maine residents that compromised information may include names, addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, taxpayer identification numbers, financial account information without security or access codes, and dates of birth. What could possibly go wrong? A financial institution's filing with the New Hampshire Attorney General specifies that Marquee will keep its firewalls patched and up to date, rotate passwords, delete unused accounts, implement MFA, increase logging retention, apply a lockout policy for excessive failed VPN logins, apply GeoIP filtering and apply firewall policies to block known botnet command and control C2 connections. Marquee is offering complimentary identity protection services to those affected. Bleeping Computer notes that a now-deleted credit union filing indicated that Marquee paid a ransom shortly after the attack. As I read this and prepare the Braille for the reading for this podcast, and yes, I do see it says Andy, but I wanted and there. I agree with Honan. And this is at the point where we decide, at our discretion, to put in what they write. And as you see, we do quote what they have to say, because it is not our writing. He writes, "It frustrates me when I see an organization state after a breach that they will implement security measures that, quite frankly, should have been in place before the breach." Marquee is a victim of a crime, and we should not victim blame. But companies should still be held accountable for not implementing good security practices. I would also add that companies who outsource services to third-party organizations, and by the way, this is spelled with an S in both of these, not Z, so they're using the British spelling for some reason. I believe this is British spelling. Like Marquee, also share responsibility and accountability for any security measures or lack thereof that are implemented. And by the way, this is Marquis. I believe this is pronounced Marquee. I don't want to pronounce this Marcus. If I'm wrong and you know the correct pronunciation of the company, please leave me a voicemail at 888-405-7524 and pronunciate the word, and we will make sure we correct it in the next available podcast recording after your message is received. We thank you for any help. Neely also has some great comments, too. He writes, "The mandated fixes Marquee is implementing really are table stakes, S-T-A-K-E-S, in today's environment. Make sure that you're already doing those things. While I still recommend starting with your boundary and working inward, the current model of outsourced and cloud services complicates that plan, meaning knowing all your services and third-party dependencies is critical. Revisiting auto-discovery is worth considering." Oh boy. Two great comments there. I could not have said it any better myself. This is not necessarily good, but within a timeline that, you know, seems pretty reasonable. I mean, the investigation took a couple of months. Then they got to go through all of that, write up a report, and then get people notified, and then put it out in the public eye. I think an additional 2 months is fair because of the fact it's complex, and they went right to work. But I am ashamed of the company for not doing this the right way the first time by making sure they're as up-to-date as possible with software and hardware. Speaking of software and hardware and companies on bad luck, the next item is just as bad. Askel is gradually recovering from October ransomware attack. Japanese retailer Askel, this is A-S-K-U-L, by the way, has partially resumed online sales following an October 19th ransomware attack. The attack rendered Askel unable to accept orders or ship merchandise. Several days after the initial attack, Askel said the issue resided in the company's warehouse management system, meaning the company's logistics systems were not operational. On October 30th, Askel revealed that the attack had compromised customer data. Shortly after that announcement, Askel began accepting limited orders via fax. The company offered a reduced inventory and would sell only to certain customers, which included those in the healthcare sector. On December 3rd, Askel announced it had restored the warehouse management system with an expanded inventory, but only for B2B orders. Consumers are still unable to order online from Askel. The company has told investors that it needs additional time to assess the extent of the damage and related matters before completing its quarterly results report. I did not include any comments, and I really don't know what to say about this except good luck, Askel. I don't know what they sell. It sounds like they sell quite a bit of merchandise. I don't know what sectors they serve. I don't know anything about them. The comments, if you are interested, are there for the reading, but I didn't feel they were worth mentioning here. It's your pretty common things. You know, make sure you learn from this, update your stuff as much as possible. Type of response. I don't know how truthful they are. I've never even heard of the company. But it sounds like a pretty bad deal, and they're still dealing with this 2 months after the fact. So we are going to be on the lookout for any updates coming from them, and then maybe I'll be able to comment more on this one. If you're an Askel employee and you're hearing this, I'd like to learn more about what you are offering. You don't have to give me every product, but you can give me an idea what you sell and maybe a website so we can take a look. I'm kind of curious now because it sounds like they can sell to anybody, but without knowing who they are, I'm not really going to say a whole lot on the matter. Okay. India. Maybe this is a good thing. After all. There were lots of questions in the last newsletter, episode 28 of this podcast. And as I indicated, maybe this is a good thing. The item title here is India Rolls Back Mandate for Pre-Installed Cybersecurity App. And now we understand what the name of this software is, because it is named again in here. So we know what the name of this software is, but I still have questions on what it actually does. On Wednesday, December 4th, 2025, India's Communication Ministry issued a press release reversing the government's original mandate for a non-removable cybersecurity app, Sati, to be pre-installed on all smartphones. Again, I'm going to spell this for everybody. This is two words. It's S-A-N-C-H-A-R, and then the next word is S-A-A-T-H-I, Sanchar Sati, or Sati. Okay? The original order was issued on Monday, December 1st, and directed smartphone manufacturers to comply within 90 days, installing Sanchar Sati on all models in the supply chain and pushing it to current devices as a software update. The mandate garnered criticism as it raised concerns over privacy, security, liability, exclusivity, including pushback from digital rights groups, think tanks, and the manufacturers themselves. And of course, I will add those that wrote comments in the last newsletter, including very good questions, and including my own. Like, what's the name of this app again? Because, like, nobody's ever heard of it. Why are they going to install something you've never heard of? This is what people are doing now already. And you claim this is a security software that's supposed to help, you know, with fraud and spam texts and calls and things of that nature? I mean, nobody's heard of them. I mean, okay, to be fair, I'm not in that country, so that makes sense for people like me not to know of what this is. So my questions are sound. But when you've got, you know, security people, like the people at Sands, for example, asking who they are and what this software is supposed to do, then you've got questions and problems. The press release cites the ongoing success and increasing acceptance of the app, with 14 million current users and 6,000 new users in the preceding 24 hours as the reason not to make the pre-installation mandatory for mobile manufacturers. Well, of course, the reason why you don't want it pre-installed everywhere is because you're talking about it. People are installing it to see what it's going to do. They're either going to keep it or they're going to get rid of it. And again, I still want to know what this is capable of doing. I'm not in India. I don't know what this is capable of. Maybe, just maybe, this might be something for our good friend at Exposed or not to ascertain, and maybe we can get a podcast file from him. So if he's listening, please reach, maybe I'll reach out to him. I was going to say, please reach out, but maybe I'll reach out to him after I'm done recording this and see if our good friend over at Exposed knows what's going on. I write. I talked about this last podcast, and it was put out last newsletter. How would you enforce this? Sounded strange to me. And now we know the name of this software, which I suspected was the case when first reading it. But I've never heard of this software. And I mentioned that again earlier while reading this ordeal. So, if anyone has used this software, or has anyone, if anyone has used this software, I probably should have put has anyone, or maybe, so if anyone has used this software, what was it like? But then, I'm reading my own comments and not making any sense of why I wrote it this way, but I did write, if so, is it accessible with assistive technology, and what exactly is it doing? Frost wrote the Nevermind post in the newsletter, and I think I put that in as part of discussion. Glad it's not required, but contact us and let us know if you're using this software and its accessibility. Curious minds want to know. The Nevermind post is the Nevermind last newsletter. I asked all these things, but it's mute now. So, never mind. And it's not in here, but you can go read it in the aforementioned newsletter. Alright, it's discombobulated time over here at the Jared Reimer Network headquarters, because that was so confusing. I knew what I wanted to say, and I knew what I wanted to write in the newsletter, but now that I'm actually reading it in Braille, it's not even making sense. I think I better just move on as we switch pages yet again, and we continue to switch pages. That's what Braille does. And I put page numbers so that if something is to happen, I know where we are in our file. So it's basically a reference point. Our next item is an FTC item, the Federal Trade Commission here in the United States, for those who are not aware. FTC reaches settlement with Illuminati Education over issues meeting issues stemming from December 2001 breach. And This one is going to be very interesting because, well, it's 4 years old. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, FTC, has reached a proposed settlement with Illuminati Education over the ed tech company's security failures. In December 2021, an intruder accessed the company's systems, which were hosted by a third-party cloud provider using credentials belonging to a former Illuminati employee who had left the company more than 3 years earlier. What could possibly go wrong? The intruder accessed and exfiltrated data belonging to more than 190 million students. We don't know how old the students are or were at the time. I want to say are because you can still be a student and be an adult and go to school. So you're technically a student. You're an adult student, not a child student. The stolen information included email and physical addresses, dates of birth, academic records, and health data. Again, what could possibly go wrong? According to the FTC, Illuminati waited 2 years to notify affected school districts. In addition, the FTC alleged that Illuminati misrepresented the level of security it provided for the information with which it was entrusted. According to the terms of the proposed settlement, Illuminati will be required to scrub from its systems all data it no longer needs to retain, adhere to a publicly available data retention schedule, develop and implement a comprehensive data security program, and notify the FTC if and when it reports data breaches to other entities. And this goes back to what I've been saying for many years across the network and across, you know, internet radio, you know, programs where we talk about security and technology. You're holding on to data that is probably necessary to get people going, but not necessary for day-to-day operations. So, what seems to be the issue here? What else was Illuminati holding on to that they may probably not have needed to hold on to? This is absolutely crazy in my book, but it probably doesn't surprise me any. Neely writes, here's the thing. We can no longer assume our data stored by third parties is secure. We need to actively verify it. Insist on MFA and where possible, use your IDM authenticators to manage access. Note, this still requires you to have a tight loop on disabling accounts, be it termination, leave, retirement, etc. Which means you need to get friendly with both HR and service contracting. So the problem here is that the company held on to an account from somebody who was there for many years, probably, maybe months, we don't know. But let's just say they were there for many years. And then let's say he left. And let's also say that the company did not remove the account. I would assume that if I were hired, that this is how it would go. I would be given an account on a computer. I, as the good citizen, would get the permissions to install access technology, whether it would be JAWS or NVDA. Now, the nice thing about NVDA is that it can be used on a thumb drive, so I could technically take the version that I'm running now on my computer, put it on an SD card, take my SD to USB device that was bought for me, and use that so that no access technology is actually on the work machine. Now, JAWS, as far as I know, doesn't offer this. You install it on the main drive, you can't change it, and that's just the way it goes. So, after all of that, I set up my profile, create strong passwords, do all of that. I get trained with the work and the software, and if needed, scripting in either Python or whatever JAWS languages are used these days. I get everything all set up. I work there for several years, and then I leave. Let's say I find another job, or they terminate me. You know, Jared, you've done great work, but we no longer need you here. You know, they do have the right to terminate you for just cause. Now, let's just say that happens. Well, in this case, you know, thanks for having me. Why are you letting me go? You know, I've been, you know, compliant. I've never taken anything from your company. I don't exfiltrate data. I believe in security and making sure your data is as secure as possible. You know, I wear headphones so that people around me don't hear what I'm doing with, you know, whatever customer or what have you. You know, whatever the job might be, if I'm dealing with, you know, sensitive data. Well, they could just say, well, you know, we're downsizing, we're whatever. Okay, I get it. I appreciate your time. If there's anything I can do for you, I would love to come back. So, I leave. Now, let's say that, you know, for a little bit, they hold on to my stuff. Of course, the screen reader is mine, so, and the card is mine, so I just take that. And I don't go back to work because they terminated me. Now, as part of what the company should do after they terminate me, is they should say, okay, we've terminated Jared. You know, maybe they lied to me, maybe they don't. But they terminated me. So now we need to remove his access so that he can't come in from the outside. We got to make it so that his account's gone and he can't do anything to us to retaliate, even though he was nice to us when we let him go. And all of that. That's what really should happen. What was the account doing there for 3 years? Yes, it collected dust and space on the server. But seriously? I would rather see the company remove my information so that I don't have an inkling later to go, oh, let's retaliate for the fact that they screwed me over, even though I was one of their best employees. Now, I'm not saying I am, I'm not saying I'm not, but just follow me. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't take their stuff. I didn't, you know, hack into their stuff, but you know what? I enjoyed it there, and they screwed me over. So I'm going to go back in and see what kind of havoc I can follow up on. We've seen stories of this, and I'm not saying that this was an insider threat. This now becomes an outsider threat because I'm not in the company anymore. But we've seen stories of this. And this is a problem that companies need to face today. We can't assume everybody is just all nice and happy. You know, they could not do a thing, and you could be all right leaving the information there. But why take the risk? That's why you see stories like this. And for articles talking about this particular story, you can find them on the newsletter for this episode. This is episode number 29 of the podcast. All right, folks, let's move on now. We don't have a time frame, but we must move along. If you have any comments, please feel free to send them. We can put your comments right into the podcast. We'll leave room for anyone who wants to submit. email iMessageTech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or better yet, if you want to use the traditional telephone, 888-405-7524, and leave a message and let me know if you want your comments aired. We would love to have your comments aired, because commentary makes discussion. And you're always welcome to ask questions. The worst we're going to say is, I don't know. As I say when I do this type of work, I would rather say I don't know than give you some answer. In fact, I was somewhere, or maybe I was working on Jaws. I forget exactly what the situation was, but I asked a question, and the rep said, I don't know. And I think it was Jaws. And I said, I'd rather hear that than just a random answer. I appreciate you telling me I don't know. And I'm chuckling because we know we've been in these situations. Okay. We move along now. I believe the next two items are CISA-related items. This is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, who tells us to do stuff, but yet the government can't even do anything. This first item is CISA, ASD, and International Partners Publish Principles for Securely Integrating AI in Operational Technology. And by the way, I will say before I read this item that it seemed to me that while they talk about this paper, they don't link to it unless it's linked within the article set. So go over to the newsletter and see if it's linked there. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency and the Australian Signals Directorate, together with other cyber-related agencies in Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, the UK, and the US, have published a joint guidance document laying out principles for securely integrating artificial intelligence in operation technology, OT. The document notes that despite the many benefits, integrating AI into operational technology, OT, environments that manage essential public services also introduces significant risks, such as OT process models drifting over time or safety process bypasses that owners and operators must carefully manage to ensure the availability and reliability of critical infrastructure. The guidance lays out four principles. Understand AI. Consider AI use in the OT domain. Establish AI governance and assistance frameworks, and embed oversight and fail-safe practices into AI and AI-enabled OT systems. The guidance focuses on machine learning, large language model-based AI, and AI agents because of the complex security considerations and challenges they pose. But the guidance also applies to systems augmented with traditional statistical modeling and logic-based automation. I didn't put any comments here because this is not something I'm familiar with, and I would rather not discuss something I'm not familiar with, but read the comments in the newsletter. As I suspected, my memory is telling me as we move on that the next item is also CISA, and this is CISA Industrial Control System Advisories. This week, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, released 14 individual control system CISA advisories. The advisories cover vulnerabilities in industrial, video, and control long watch, Iskra, iHub, and iHub Light, Mirion Medical EC2 software, NMIS Bio Dose, Mitsubishi Electric CNC Series Update A, Melsec IQR Series IQF Series Update C, and GX Works 2 Max Hub Pivot Johnson Controls OpenBlue Mobile Web Application for OpenBlue Workplace and iStar Sunbird DCIM DC Track and Power IQ Solis Cloud Monitoring Platform Advantech iView Concilium Safety CS5000 Fire Panel Update A and Johnson Controls FX Server XF80 and XF90 Update A. At least one of the vulnerabilities, a critical missing authentication and critical function issue, CVE 2025-13510 in Iskra iHub and iHub Lite does not currently have a fix. CISA advises users to take defensive measures to minimize the risk of exploitation of this vulnerability, such as minimizing, and they put this in brackets, the ING, network exposure for all control system devices and or systems, ensure they are not accessible from the internet, locating, and that's ING in brackets again, control system networks and remote devices behind firewalls and isolating them from business networks, and when remote access is required, using, the, again, bracketed ING, more secure methods such as virtual private networks, VPNs. Recognizing VPNs may have vulnerabilities and should be updated to the most current version available. Also recognize VPN is only as secure as the connected devices. And as we move to the editorial board, which means we've completed the newsletter, I will just say that I don't know a whole lot about these types of things, but We know from experience of reading that VPN could also stand for Virtual Public Network. We termed that over on TSB because we've seen many, many, many different VPNs that claim that they can do the job in many different countries. And if you go over to email host security, you will find that we only recommend two, which are known to make sure that you are as protected as you could be. They are Nord and Express. And I'm sure there are others, but remember what Kim Komando has said. If you are not paying for the product, you are the product. So please remember that when dealing with this last item. The editorial board of Sans News Bites. Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris LG, David Holzer, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spitzner, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vautrinot, and William Hugh Murray. There may be other names of contributors who might comment on some of these items who are not listed. And remember that SANS is an educational institution where you can get free or cost training, certification, and so forth in a lot of this stuff that they are talking about in today's landscape. SANS Institute is located at 11,200 Rockville Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. If you need assistance signing up or managing subscriptions, email support@sans.org or call area code 301-654-7267. That reaches them in the state of Maryland on the East Coast. I am Jared Reimer for SANS, and I love what they're doing. We did comment on quite a number of these items today, and I know that at least two of them may be played on at least one Throwback Saturday Night. I'm not exactly sure how they want to do it, because Throwback Saturday Night is not my program. We just provide the content and the ability for them to have content. So we do provide things that they may want to talk about. I've not forgotten about blogging. I did talk about the aforementioned UK thing. I'm probably going to go back and see if I can find it and blog it, because that seems to be one of the big items coming out of CyberWire. And we'll see what that's all about. LastPass, bad news. Bad news, friends. I hope that everybody has enjoyed the episode, and during the holiday break, we will be continuing to catch up on SANS. We've since deleted all older episodes of the newsletter that we are not going to cover, because we can only go so far. I would like to thank everybody for listening, And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, I'll give my contact information one more time. Email iMessage tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may call the comment line and leave a message at 888-405-7524. If there's a better way that we should do this podcast, I would love to hear it. If you think we should do this in segments where, you know, I put music behind each one, we can do that too and then merge the files. So let me know how we're doing and let me know if we need to make any change. I hope to see you again on another edition of the program when I make the next file available. And until then, thanks so much for listening, and do make it a wonderful day. Stay safe out there.